Radio City, John Grayson, Rob Ross here with you, and we have a brand new week upon us and a whole another week behind us that is just full of so many unfathomable things. But Rob Ross, how's everything going in the Big Apple?
It's going pretty well, John. You know, it was, for once, I'm happy to say, a calm week. The weather was not misbehaving, and no complaints, knock wood.
Right. Well, the one thing that I think that is especially out of New York that we can take a look at right here at the outset is New York Magazine. And this is something that, you know, is so completely of the city. And it's kind of like Seinfeld. I used to look at Seinfeld and think, why does anybody outside of New York get this? And it's kind of the same thing with New York Magazine. But New York Magazine has taken a little bit of a turn, you've noticed lately.
Yeah, New York Magazine basically equals nothing now. There's nothing worth reading. And I say that with my teeth gritted and just wondering if I'm going to continue my subscription because I've had it for at least a decade,
yeah,
if not longer. It's become a cheap rag, and it seems to go on one of two tangents on a regular basis. It's either Trump bad, and then all this gender fluidity nonsense for parents to let their kids explore. It's like every week they give more credence to the idiocy of parents of, my kids can choose whatever sex they want. No, they can't. Okay? This is a simple fact, people, and I'm not going to get on a soapbox, but I'm going to make this very, very clear. If you have male genitalia, you are a male. If you have female genitalia, you are a female. What you think and what you have are two completely separate elements. I'm sorry to disappoint you. You know, you can have sexual reassignment surgery. It's cosmetic. But at the end of the day, you are what you are. You know, a boy wearing a dress but still looking like a boy is a boy. You know, if he's going to look completely feminine, let him go to the girls' room. That's fine. I don't care. It's just this whole thing of giving credence and your blessing from a magazine that's basically a more upscale version, and I'm using the term very loosely, of Time Out magazine, because Time Out, at least I can get once a week for free,
right,
on the way home from the ferry.
Well, and the thing is for me, look, as far as what anybody thinks they are or feels like they are or wants to be called, I couldn't possibly care less. If you were born with a penis and you want it gone and you want to be called she and her and all of that, fine. I got no problem with that. I have no truck with how anybody else wants to live their life as long as they're the only ones affected by it. But where it starts to cross me up is I don't need a magazine to give me parenting tips. I don't need a magazine to tell me, you know, how I should to liberalize my parenting or to send it off in the other direction and be a more conservative parent. I can make those decisions on my own, and I did. So, yeah, New York Magazine, don't tell. It's not your place to tell anybody else how to raise their kids.
Exactly. The self-righteous sanctimony of a magazine that lacks journalistic integrity, I find it to be not amusing, but really disturbing at this stage. And you know what? Probably by the time this subscription ends, I will just stick with getting my free copy of Time Out. And by the way, there is one thing. Now that I think about it, as soon as the words came out of my mouth where I said no complaints, I just remembered something. This was the week of hell taking the ferry. And I say that because it was spring break.
Oh. So
the torture of having X more amount of tourists coming in.
Yeah.
But the ferry themselves having the audacity on days when the weather wasn't a factor saying because of weather conditions, we're running on a 20-minute schedule and, you know, leaving me stranded for 10 extra minutes when I busted a gut to make a certain boat. That's my complaint of the week. And I think justifiable because I'm part of a Facebook group called St. George Neighborhood by the Ferry. And it's a really good, constructive. See, this is when Facebook actually has infinite good things about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just basically people in the neighborhood either asking about doctors and, you know, if they're new to the neighborhood, where's a good place to get your hair cut and so on and so forth. I cannot tell you how many conversations I had over the what is going on with the ferries situation. And it really is becoming concerning and disconcerting at the same time because you get down there, you want to make a certain boat. Like, I need to make the 8 o'clock boat so I can be across by 8:30 and be in my office by 8:45. It's pretty clear-cut and standard every day. when they start to screw around with the schedule as they have done, and you don't know, now you're going into the unknown, what, do I have to leave an extra 20 minutes early? Because I really don't want to run down to the ferry terminal.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be able to walk at a normal pace and be in the right mindset for the work day ahead.
Yeah, and it's completely understandable. And anything that throws your day off like that, I mean, we live in a place that doesn't have the option of having that kind of public transportation. I would really like it to be there. But as far as living with tourists is concerned, the 25 years I spent living in Florida, let me tell you something about spring break and summer break and all of the times when it's peak tourist season. I don't know what it is that makes people think, I'm going to go on vacation, and I need to remember the keys, and I need to remember the reservations, and the condo, and all the clothes I'm going to need, but I don't really need my brain. I'll just leave that back at home sitting on my desk.
Well, here's the double insanity of all of this. Apart from the tourists who, when you get onto the Staten Island Ferry, they seem to crowd right past the people who are, you know, residents and commuters, right?
Right.
So then they lollygag their way onto the boat and they walk around like zombies, you know, with that whole look on their faces, you know, back at the fact that they're actually getting on a boat. I know it's a lofty concept to put one foot in front of the other, walk down the little ramp and onto the ferry itself. I know that's hard to do.
Yeah.
But the fact that the ferry canceled several boats during the span of the week, thankfully I was not on waiting for any of these, canceled due to overcrowding, and this is because of the tourists. This is when you have to use some logic, and there's been talk about how do we deal with the tourist problem that is now congesting the ferries, especially once the outlet mall opens up right next to the ferry terminal. I came up with a quick fix that I think is pretty feasible. We have the regular ferries. Then we have two smaller boats that they run if there's a major emergency and one of the boats during a rush hour breaks down for whatever reason. That's what it's like. Or they run them overnight when there are so many less people, okay? Why not run the smaller ferries strictly for the tourists and charge the tourists? Because the Staten Island Ferry is free. Residents can easily apply for a card. Very simple. You walk in, you swipe it. They know you're a resident. You don't pay. You get on a regular ferry. You can go to work or school or wherever the hell you have to go. But the tourists have to pay to ride the ferry. I think it's fair. I think it's logical. End of discussion.
You know? Again, you need to be in charge. And
we all know about that. And sooner or later, the insurrection will begin.
Exactly. And speaking of the insurrection beginning, you know, it's funny because you talk about New York Magazine and how the drumbeat against Donald Trump is so consistent and so constant. And I have Sirius Radio in the car, and I usually don't listen to it, but every so often there's something going on, and I just figure, hey, I'll pop in and see what's going on, and I'll spend 5 minutes. And by the time I'm done, I'm so completely and thoroughly turned off by it. And it's not that I have any great love for Donald Trump. I think the guy's an asshole, and he's a complete incompetent. But I already know that, and it's the same thing. I know how to parent my kids. Don't need you for that. And I know Donald Trump's an idiot and a moron, so I don't need you to constantly remind me of that. Why don't we wait until there's something actually happening and then cover it, you know, like news people do? And I did something this week, and it's been far too long because everything seems to be of so much weight and so much concern in this era of having that moron in the White House. And I got sick of it, and I turned back to my music, and I was so happy, and I just cruised along, not knowing what the latest breaking news was, and not giving a shit, and enjoying myself, and I had it cranked up loud, and it was actually warm enough that I could have the windows down, and the top, you know, pulled back, and the whole deal, and it was magic. It was just magic.
Well, that was an incredibly wonderful description. For some reason, I just hear you driving along, pounding the steering wheel to Danger Zone, and that frightened me.
That was not one of the selections, but...
I said that. You know, if you're going to listen to SiriusXM, just put on Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Yeah,
That's a no-miss. Everything on there, all the shows and all the hosts are terrific. It's just this oversaturation of Trump bad, Trump bad, Trump bad. Yes. We know that. We knew that. Everyone knew that. Everyone knows it. What else are you going to tell me?
Right.
I've gotten to the point where I don't even watch any of the news networks anymore, nor do I watch the major networks for any kind of national or international news coverage. I keep it, you know, minimized down to either New York One, so I can get the absolutes on the city and you know, occasionally a little report about Staten Island since they stopped doing the specific neighborhood reports.
Yeah.
And the weather. That's all I need. The essentials. If I want a wrap-up on national and or international news, I'll watch CBS News at 11 o'clock, you know, and that's enough for me. I'm done. I gave up on the newspapers because, as we well know, they don't have writers. They, strike that. They don't have journalists.
Right.
So that's out the window. So, yeah, I never listen to anything that's even slightly news-oriented on XM when I'm in the car. It's either on, like I said, Little Steven's Underground Garage, the Beatles channel. Occasionally I'll flip to First Wave, even though it just basically sounds like WLIR circa 1984, 85, and that's not particularly interesting at this stage of the game. You know, I just listen to music, and that's it.
Right.
And there's you need to get away from it. You need, you know, the thing is what you were saying about you were being bombarded by it. When I'm bombarded by it, I swear to you, I feel like I've run a marathon. I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted by the conversations. I am exhausted by hearing it. When I hear it on the ferry, and this is why I'm a big proponent of having my iPod with me at all times and having the headphones on. Because when I'm on the ferry, it's relaxing. It's a way to prepare myself for the workday or to diffuse at the end of the workday.
Right. Yeah, and the thing is, you know what they're doing is it's the very simplest, easiest, laziest thing you could possibly do. And remind me I said that because I want to go off on a movie that we saw just over the last couple of hours too, in a positive direction, but we'll get to that later. What they're doing is lazy, and it's lazy because, as you said, they don't want to pay anybody competent to do the job, so they peddle rage. And rage is an easy sell. So they know all we have to do is say, breaking news, Donald Trump said something stupid, and people will get outraged because it's enraging. But rage is as you said, it's exhausting. And you just get so friggin' fatigued by it all. So it's the same thing that put that man in office in the first place. I mean, what did they spend 2 years doing on the campaign trail? They spent that 2 years peddling rage. And rage at Mexicans, rage at Muslims, rage at everybody, rage at liberals, rage at Obama. And they did nothing but pound that and pound it and pound it. And it got them into the White House because it's an easy sell. He ran a lazy campaign against a bad candidate and he got in because peddling rage works. I can't do it anymore. I can't. I can't stay that angry at something.
Well, on the flip side of that, that's why I can no longer tolerate or deal with people who call themselves liberals, but certainly have a very, very pointedly, you know, racist way about themselves. And I'm not saying that with any sense of humor or let me put it to you this way. I was engaged in I don't even want to call it a discussion, but it was a one-sided attack by several of the, quote, you know, Facebook doyen in a particular group in which the phrases white male privilege kept being used over and over and over again. Now, I'm sorry, but if you're going to keep, you know, secularizing it by saying white, you know, right there, that's racist.
Right. Well,
second of all, you're also being equally sexist when you're complaining about, you know, and it's coming from women, and then they do the whole women-splaining thing. You know, I have too much class to basically say what I was really thinking, which I'm sure any rational human being would probably be thinking the same thing after reading these. You know, the tedium of having to deal with and listen to this crap, all you're doing is listing somebody else's, I guess, bullet points just to try and prove your point. You're telling me nothing I don't already know. You're getting away from the subject at hand.
It's but again, it's laziness. An ad hominem like that, when you're going after somebody for who they are, even if you're doing it under the auspices, again, of being, you know, enlightened and saying, well, you have the privilege because you are white and you are male, but to immediately devalue somebody's argument, to immediately devalue somebody's point because they are who they are, what's the difference at that point? It doesn't make any difference. As long as you're using the same old tropes to diminish somebody else, instead of coming up with a point to refute them, then you're lazy and your argument is worthless.
Or if you should do anything, you should be trying to embrace those who think like you and make it even more of a, you know, a linear thing of, all right, how do we buck against this?
Right.
When it's coming from within.
Yeah.
What you're doing is digging the foundations for people to turn on you with an easy vengeance. And believe me, it is very easy to do that.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, it's labeling somebody and then invalidating them by virtue of the fact that that label exists. Who does that sound like?
Well, I'll tell you what, my final word on that was, well, this is just Facebook anyway. This isn't some kind of coalition.
Well put, sir. Now, on to the fun stuff, because we do have so much to go over, and back to the music, as a matter of fact, because you found something this week, and there's a review up online at Popdos that I every so often you'll hit me with somebody that is brand new to me. And you did it again this week, even though I feel kind of silly now that I did not know more about Chris Smither before reading your review of Chris Smither's new album. So back up and do some of the groundwork for us. Where have I been on this guy?
You know, it's an interesting thing about him because he has been around for a long time. This is his 18th album. The new album is called Call Me Lucky. But the thing is that if you want to talk about someone who's truly been quote-unquote undergone or a cult hero for the extent of his career, that would be him, because he isn't easily definable. I couldn't call him country. I couldn't call him Americana. I couldn't call him neo-folk. The worst I can do is say singer-songwriter.
Right.
Because that's what he is first and foremost. But he is someone that doesn't follow the predictable, if you will, the predictable lines of how anyone in those musical veins would go. I'm going to go right into it. This new album, one of the songs that he does is a cover of She Said, She Said. Yes, that She Said, She Said.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, try to imagine the song completely reimagined and deconstructed in a way that you wouldn't have thought of previously. You know, slowed down, quietly, acoustically, but yet very full. It's not stripped down. It's just slowed down and it's warmer, and it sounds nothing like the Beatles, except you know the melody because you know the song.
She said, I know what it's like to be dead. I know what it is to be sad. She's making me feel like I've never been born. I said, who put all those things in your hair? Things that make me feel it, I'm sad. You're making me feel like I've never been born.
That's the kind of thing he does with a great deal of ease. But the fact that he's such a powerful writer and lyricist, you know, he is someone who he's writing. I feel he's writing from a very personal standpoint. And because he's writing from that personal standpoint, you can easily relate to it, because they're lyrics that are, while eloquent, they're universal.
Yeah. Well, and there were a couple of things that stood out to me. First of all, this particular project is interesting because he put out two albums full of the same songs. And
right.
I don't know that I've heard of anybody doing that before.
Right. And they're not demos on the second disc. They're different versions and variations.
Right.
And that, I think, is a very clever thing to do, because sometimes, you know, I have found very often on that there are artists who record different versions of songs, and later on they kind of sit back and go, yeah, I wish I'd released this version as opposed to that version. And then maybe 20, 25 years later you hear it. Elvis Costello was very good about doing that when he did the first round of CD reissues of his early albums. There's something like four or five different versions of Clown Time Is Over.
Right, you know what I mean? Right.
But you know, with Chris Smither, I think this was done. What it is it's all done very fresh. And he basically sat there and evaluated and said, okay, you know what? I like this arrangement too. Let's give them both.
Yep.
And I think that's very generous. I think that's very fair to fans.
Oh, no doubt. And it also allows him the artistic fluidity to say there's more ways to interpret this. And for somebody who's been interpreting other people's music the same way, it's neat to have him go back and treat his own music to that. And the other thing that stood out to me is that because he's been around for long enough to make 18 previous albums, he has an experience in his voice that doesn't come across necessarily as age, but you know what? He sounds like your favorite uncle. He has a delivery that even when he's on a more serious track with the lyrics, always comes off with a little bit of a smile. He's like,
yes, you know,
there's, you mentioned musical warmth. There is also a warmth about his voice that's just incredible.
You absolutely hit it. I was going to say, I'm not world weary per se, but knowing and still able to give you that little wink and a nod at the end of the story.
Yes.
That is the perfect way of summing up his vocal delivery. It's the voice of experience, perspective, and a glimmer of hope still in there.
Right.
The humanity remains.
Exactly. Yeah, a guy came out on the other side of those experiences, wiser for it all, but still happy and still optimistic about the future. It's a very cool vibe. So definitely got to get a hold of this one and read Rob's review as well. A couple of other things. I mentioned the movies. I want to get to TV first, though, because you've been watching a lot of Tube over the last little while, and we're now into the middle of April, where most of the new seasons have either already started or the sort of mid-season breaks are over with and everybody's back. The Americans is back, and by the way, back with a bang. And you know, there's a few other shows that you've been watching. What's on the TiVo these days?
Well, on the short end of it is Billions is back, and So Far So Good. Homeland started really slow and very ponderous at best. It was completely confusing for the first few episodes.
Yep.
But now it's going great guns. So that picked up impetus. Silicon Valley is back, and it still has its wry snarkiness, but I hate to say it, without T.J. Miller there as the fulcrum, even though his character lost a lot of his steam before he left,
yeah,
there's something still missing from it. So I'm not sure how much it can carry further. Next week is the last episode for this season of The Walking Dead, which has been, as it's been per the last few years, starts good, dips, kind of picks up again. It's been a little bit wobbly the last two shows.
Mm-hmm.
Ash versus Evil Dead is just a hoot and a half. And this season has been the best one so far. That is to make the Evil Dead stories into a weekly series was a masterstroke. And we've talked about Bruce Campbell, and he is a comedic genius.
Yeah.
He really is. But most importantly and most saliently of all, there was a TV show that appeared originally in 2009 on MTV about several young people getting together and sharing a house down in Seaside Heights. No, it's not the real world. It was, yeah, buddy, Jersey Shore. And the cultural phenomenon that it became overnight is hysterical as it's devastatingly frightening. Why? Because I grew up around Guidos. I know what they're like.
Right.
And the ones that I grew up with, I wished imminent harm upon. These Guidos are just hysterical. The problem is, of course, it led to a bunch of cultural stereotypes being reinforced. First of all, brought back to the fore and then reinforced. And that gave the MTV networks license to do a show that truly offended me, like Mob Wives, because it took place in Staten Island.
Mm-hmm.
I despise and I loathe them for the fact that they bore out, again, the stereotypes that people think of Staten Islanders. And I truly resent them, and I will curse them forever for doing that. But Jersey Shore went off after way too much saturation of them in 2012. And now I'm unfortunately really happy to say they're back with a new series called Jersey Shore Family Vacation, because basically everyone's now 5 years older. Several of them are now married. All of them have kids or are having kids. One of them, the guy who was, of course, the bad guy, The Situation, he went through a whole rebirth because he had been doing drugs and drinking and wound up in rehab. He cleaned up his act, but he was also indicted by the federal government for tax evasion. So he's got some serious issues on hand, but he's been the surprise of this one episode or two episodes, because it was a 2-hour premiere. He's sort of the peacemaker and the wise one in the house. And that first episode was just hilarious and really entertaining. And I hate to say it, but it's the kind of train wreck TV that can make me smile. Certainly far and away better than garbage, like Real Housewives of, you know,
wherever. Yeah.
Right. So yeah, it's been a fair. Oh, and of course the return of my favorite Tosh.0. Even though he's done the reboot, you know, I mean, he hasn't really done much except he's got a new set and he's got maybe a couple of different little elements to some of the segments, but that show is still as brilliant as it ever was. And that's a saving grace for Comedy Central, because who knows if and when, keywords, South Park may be back.
Right. Well, and in the middle of all of that, I mean, SNL continues its slow deflation, and, you know, there's not much to watch for there. They haven't, unfortunately, found a new formula that works. And so, I mean, at least with Daniel Tosh, you've got somebody who is intelligent and original making a go of it. At the same time, you have a guy who started in that same kind of realm in Jordan Peele, who has now got so many new projects underway. And all of them sound absolutely fascinating. I think, as just in the way of a prediction, over the next 10 years, Jordan Peele is probably going to be the name we're going to hear of most. Not necessarily as a performer, but as a director and a producer.
Well, he was very funny on Key and Peele.
Yep. And then Get Out, you know.
I was of the mindset that Get Out was entertaining enough, sure. But let's see what he can do beyond that. Because I'll tell you what, as a performer, if he doesn't perform anymore, it would be a shame, because he's really good at being hilarious and yet really creepy. Because of the two, he was the creepier.
Right, right. Yeah, because Keegan-Michael Key was much more in the physical comedy realm. He was the one who was over the top all the time. He was the slapstick guy. And right. Jordan Peele was a little bit more of an enigma.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Key is the more animated one. He's very good at making himself cartoony. But Jordan Peele, especially when he would do that creepy sex addict character, yeah. That was just, whoa, you know.
Exactly.
Something really, really off-putting about that.
And with the Americans, I the thing that was interesting to me is they're into their final season now, is that they went as far forward from one season to another, because they had been going essentially year by year, and they've leapt up to, I believe, 1988 or 89 now.
We're in 87, actually.
Is 87, okay.
We're in October 87, and the thing about it is that what had started to happen a couple of years ago has indeed happened. Philip has basically become an American, and he doesn't want to do it anymore.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah, he quit. He walked away.
And you notice they brought back the Russian, the former KGB agent, to ask him to help to try and make sure that Elizabeth doesn't go and screw up the Star Wars, et cetera, agreements with the Russians.
Right. Yeah, because there's essentially a hit out on Gorbachev.
Right. He is part of the team that's trying to prevent that from happening. So the question becomes now, will it be Elizabeth versus Philip? Will Elizabeth see the light that what is in fact happening is good for Russia and not some kind of preemptive strike by Big Bad Americans? The only part of the storyline that I'm really sick of is the daughter.
Yeah.
It's pointless at this stage. It really is. But the acting, I have to say, I got to give it to Matthew Rhys, because between he and Noah Emmerich, they're the two most riveting characters, because the fact that he's still genuinely close friends with Stan Beeman, and yet Stan has never had an inkling
right.
that his dear friend Philip is a Russian spy.
And it's right, and it's got to happen. And I'll tell you, I don't know if you remember this. There was an episode. Were you into Night Court as a rule?
Not really. I mean, I would occasionally watch it because I had the hots for Marky Post.
Oh, who didn't? Of course. But there was an episode of Night Court that was so brilliant. And I don't know if it's out there anywhere. Somebody's got to have the old episodes of that thing. But it was the one where Harry Anderson wasn't there. And I don't remember why, if it was a contract dispute or if he was just on vacation or something, but they shot an episode where the guest judge was Jeff Altman. And he was playing this sleazy guy. He got along really well with John Larroquette's character. And they were, you know, just shooting lines back and forth and talking about Marky Post's tits for the entire show. And as it turned out, they were trying to, it was two sting operations going at the same time. So they were trying to find out if Dan was dirty. Dan went to the feds and said, hey, I think this judge is dirty. So they started investigating him. Well, the two investigators from the FBI knew each other and didn't know they were working on the same case. So the big reveal at the end is these two guys walking into the same room and they're like, Bert? Ernie? And so that's what I see at the end of The Americans.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to end. I would have wrapped it up in a nice linear manner, and it would have been, you know, Philip gives up first, becomes what he has become now. A yuppie. And then Elizabeth sees that it's not so bad, and plus the end of communism as we knew it.
Right.
What are you fighting for now?
By the
way, we have a life here, and our kids are here.
One other quick thing about that Night Court episode. It was also the one that was famous for cutting back from a commercial with Dan Fielding saying, to Jeff Altman. And the Mother Superior says, $25, same as in town. I about fell out of my chair.
I love John Larroquette.
Maybe my favorite punchline of any joke ever. So with that said, we do have got to get into the movies because...
Before we get into the movies here, I'm going to do a couple of jokes, but I'm just going to give you the punchline.
Okay, hit it.
How the banana got, how the elephant got into my pajamas, I'll never know. And he said, I can't hear you. There's a banana in my ear. Okay, over to you.
And the pirate said, bring me my brown pants. So, we went to the movies a couple of times over the last couple of days, and we wanted to get into this anyway because there was big news this week about MoviePass. I was one of the early adopters, as was my lovely bride. And so we pay our $10 a month and we can go to the movies once a day. So yesterday we went to the movies. Today we went to the movies and didn't pay to get in. So the news is that, first of all, MoviePass has now merged with MoviePhone. And second of all, the feud, the longstanding feud between MoviePass and AMC is now over. And AMC is going to, for perpetuity, allow you to use MoviePass at all of their theaters nationwide. This is huge because they're one of the biggest theater chains out there.
Wow, that is huge because there are two theaters on Staten Island at the moment. One was knocked down, the one I told you about, you know, the one with the cheapest movies in all of New York.
Yep.
But the big theater, the one with the stadium seating, is in fact an AMC theater. So that is big. We're also getting one of those Alamo theater chains.
Right.
That's being built in place of what had been there, which was an old United Artists cinema. And an AMC theater is actually going to open up right down the street from me at the outlet mall. So that's pretty big. Now, I didn't even know, to be honest with you, MoviePhone even existed still.
Yeah, I know. It's been a long time.
Hello, and welcome to MoviePhone. To see Revenge of the Jedi, press 1.
Uh-huh. No, but, it is a cool thing. And, you know, if you haven't yet looked into the whole MoviePass thing, definitely worthwhile, especially if you go to the movies a lot. And, I mean, even if you only go twice or three times a month, it's still worth your while to go ahead and jump on board with this thing.
By telling me that you're now able to use these at any theater, if I'm not understanding it correctly,
yep.
Then. That might make it worth it for us to invest simply because it's more than $10 for one person to go to a movie
right.
In New York.
Right.
I think the cheapest, and I might be stretching it, the cheapest might be $12.50.
Yeah. And everybody has to have their own. So even if it's just you and your bride, then you're each going to have your own movie pass. But still, if you go once a month, you're paid for. So on that front, we went yesterday. What did we see yesterday? We were going to go see A Quiet Place, which is John Krasinski's new horror movie. And we didn't because it was already dark out and Jen didn't want to leave that movie in the dark. So we ended up seeing Ready Player One, the new Spielberg thing.
Okay.
It's fine. It's a cute story. I don't know that it's going to be anywhere near the blockbuster that they were hoping it was going to be. The references are cute. It has a couple of gaping holes in the story, but I'm not so sure that's Spielberg's fault. I have never read the source material. I've never read the book, so I don't know, you know, how much of that is the fault of the story itself, but there's a lot of things that are wrong in this world in which the movie takes place that the movie really doesn't care that they're wrong. And that's a big deal. It's a big problem, but it's a fun ride. If you're looking for one to go to and just sit back and go, oh yeah, I remember that. I remember when that came out. Oh, that's a cute reference for, you know, a futuristic movie, and just enjoy it, then yeah, you can do that. Today, we remedied last night's situation by going to see A Quiet Place. Do you know the setup on this movie?
Something about aliens?
There's monsters. We don't know if they're aliens, but there's monsters. And
you have to be completely silent, otherwise they're going to get you.
Right.
And Emily Blunt, who I think is incredibly hot, is in it.
Yes, she is, and yes, she is. And the deal is they're blind, and apparently they have no sense of smell either, because they can't find you that way. But if you make a sound, they will hone in on you and they will rip you to shreds. The monsters are cool. The story is great. And it doesn't really explain itself either, but it doesn't have to. It gives you the, this happened to humanity and here's what's left kind of situation. And the thing that I was happiest about in this movie, going back to our earlier conversation about laziness, is when I started to see the previews for this, I started thinking, oh, there's going to be a big twist. There's going to be a big O. Henry, M. Night Shyamalama Ding Dong kind of twist at the end of this movie, and it's going to piss me off because I hate those, and I am very happy to report, no, there isn't.
You know, now that you said that, I forgot to mention, last night Liz was watching The Florida Project.
Oh, yeah.
And she stopped for a moment, and she said, do you know about this movie? And I said, yeah, John and I talked about it because John had seen it, and she said, did he like it? I was like, yep, up until the ending. I said, so you can figure that out for yourself and you see if you pick up on the same thing. I got to ask her what she thought of the ending.
Yeah, right. I'm interested to know.
We'll up on that.
Yeah, we'll put that out for next month or for next week or on our next broadcast. But yeah, I mean, definitely two very different movies and two different movies in terms of quality. I liked Quiet Place a lot better, but yeah, we're starting to get to that point of the year where there's some good stuff coming out. The other thing I liked a lot about A Quiet Place is that even though I'm sure the monsters weren't really there, I mean, I'm sure they're all CGI because they move real fast and they do the standard CGI stuff. It wasn't overwhelming and they didn't rely on it.
Well, that's helpful.
Yeah.
The idea of making a movie creepy is not to rely on the trickery or the, you know.
Correct.
It's nice to see somebody get their throat slit, but, you know.
Yep.
I mean, facts are facts.
Exactly.
You know, you've got to do it the right way. You know, quote unquote slasher films have lost so much footage footing since the 80s when, you know, they were all shot in Canada on the cheap. You know, you go for these big, you know, big studio productions and what do you get? Ooh, the implied version of the, you know, knife across the throat instead of seeing somebody's head being ripped off or an arrow through the neck.
Right.
Just the way you want it, you know. Nobody's going to be cutting off the head of Mrs. Voorhees in this day and age, you know, because that's not PC.
Yeah, you know what?
Kind of looking forward to it. And like, you know how I am about movies is Truth or Dare.
They showed the preview for that before this one. They showed the 2.5 minute long trailer for it.
Here's the reason why I like Happy Death Day a lot.
Okay.
That's the same folks.
Oh, all right. Yeah, because watching the trailer, it reminded me a little bit of – now I'm going to have to remember the name of the movie. It Follows. And It Follows was okay.
That's generous.
Yeah, right. But I think, I mean, you know, it found an audience with people who are 20 to 22. I was okay with it. But, yeah, this one reminded me a little bit of that while I was watching the trailer. I hope it doesn't go that way. But, yeah, looks like it could be fun.
As long as it's creepy.
Right.
See, I like creepy more than obvious.
Yep.
You know, when you have these people make those weird faces and the guy gouges his eye out with a pen, you know, that's a no miss.
Right. Now, we do have some more things to talk about in the vein of the political world and, you know, back to reality for just a little bit, because there were some things that went on this week that have an economic tie to them. And I guess we should start with the fact that Donald Trump twice this week kicked the economy in the teeth just by opening his stupid trap.
Yeah, I mean, with his ballyhooing about Amazon and going after them hard and heavy.
Yeah.
And his tariffs against the Chinese, who immediately said, we don't want a trade war, but okay, we're going to give you one. And, you know, so they slapped tariffs on us.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you, President Asshole.
And there was a horror movie connection there as well, because one of the first things they put a tariff on the Chinese was pig's blood, which immediately took me back to Carrie. So aside from that, it is, I mean, since January, the numbers are these. The economy, or at least the Dow, has lost 4,000 points since January. And I don't understand this compulsion. Where you had George W. Bush, not that the two are the same in any respect, because at least George W. Bush had some kind of general knowledge of how the world works, but he came in riding an economy that was just going gangbusters, and we were running a surplus for the first time since, I think, Lyndon Johnson. So things were going okay, and the first thing he did when he took office was fuck it up. He, you know, he gave everybody $600 checks, and immediately the surplus turned back into a deficit, and the debt started skyrocketing again. And then September 11th, and then the wars, and all of the other shit. But, why is it that they can't let success continue to succeed? Donald Trump started to see all of the groundwork that was set during Obama's administration start to pay off, and things were on a huge upturn, and some of the things that he did early on, getting rid of regulations and all of that, and doing things that businessmen really get a hard on for, were starting to make the Dow just skyrocket again the same way that it was in the late 90s. And so what did he do? Well, he sat around and thought, I can't have this. How can I fuck this up? And he did it, to the tune of half of the gains.
Think about this. How many times has he gone bankrupt? This is why.
Yeah,
because he's not the businessman he portrays himself to be. We know this. We've known this for decades now.
Right.
Enough. There's no need for us to go into a whole dissertation about it. It's the fact that he really doesn't know what he's doing, and he's never known what he's doing. And the minute that he actually gets involved, that's when things start to go to hell, because he is truly incompetent. He's a moron.
Right. Well, and he proved that again.
Retarded for all we know.
Exactly. And the one thing that has been a saving grace for the post office, and this was just so completely out of the bounds of any kind of knowledge. I mean, the post office has been hurting for years and years and years because nobody mails letters anymore. People don't mail bills anymore, and people don't send each other letters anymore. We send email and we pay our bills online. That's what has been torpedoing the post office. The one thing, one sector where they started to make money again was in shipping because of Amazon. So what does the president do? Amazon's fucking up the post office. What?
Well, the post office certainly fucked up on their own with my delivering my book by Chris Stamey, which we'll get to in a little while, because I was supposed to receive it last Friday.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden, and it arrived in Staten Island, and all of a sudden there was a problem, and we will now bring it by Wednesday. Well, Wednesday turned into Thursday, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, I blame Amazon for that. You're working with people who don't know what the hell they're doing or are deliberately trying to screw the customers. Maybe this is their way of showing a little protest about Donald Trump. But, hey, you're messing with my Chris Stamey book.
That's right. This shall not stand.
Exactly. This aggression will not stand, man.
New shit has come to light, man. And in the middle of all of this, basketball is now officially over for the year, at least NCAA basketball is over for the year. And, after all of the craziness and a 16 beating a 1 for the first time in tournament history and all of the upsets that screwed up everybody's brackets, except mine, because I never fill one out, there was at the very end of this a number 1 against a number 3.
Right, and like some of the other games that you didn't expect the outcome of, it was a blowout.
Yeah.
So it became boring really quickly. Villanova won. Knock, knock. Who's there? Wah. Wahoo. Yeah, exactly. Wahoo. Yeah. I don't care. You know, I really don't care. Like I said before, I was going for Kentucky because I have so many friends who are in, who are from Kentucky. And Ashley Judd.
And Ashley Judd, sure.
Right. Otherwise, yeah. You know, once Duke was bounced and once North Carolina was just absolutely shellacked, what am I going to cheer for? Nothing. You know, I don't really care.
There is the one question at the center of all of this, which is how many more championships until the city of Philadelphia just turns into a giant steaming pit?
Well, I love the city of Philadelphia, but boy, they certainly do not know how to be graceful winners, do they? They really don't. You know, it's a beautiful city. I spent many, many years going there as a fan of the Phillies. And you know, in my childhood, I was a really big American Revolutionary War period buff. And being a child at, you know, at the time of the Bicentennial, I was just Philly potty. So we would go to Philadelphia on a regular basis. And I have a very soft spot in my heart for Philadelphia. But really, these are the people that throw batteries at Santa Claus.
Yeah, you know? Right.
You know, they also, you know, built a statue for somebody who doesn't exist. You
know? And then tried to get rid of it for decades. Yeah, they'll be all right sooner or later. And one of these days they'll realize that the rest of the world isn't really out to get them. No, they won't. And oh, and we do, on a serious note, I hate to keep jumping around like this, but
that's what keeps the show entertaining. That's why our listeners come back week after week.
Exactly.
We do have listeners, and they are riveted because you don't know what's coming next.
Exactly. And in this case, it is a sad goodbye to somebody neither one of us knew. However, when you have friends who lose a family member, it's something that you can feel. And you and I are both big fans of Jody Stevens and Jimmy Stevens Jr. and what they've been able to do musically over the years and what they've meant to the city of Memphis over the years. And there is a third brother, or at least there was. David Stevens died this weekend.
Yeah, it's a little bit difficult for me to talk about because I love Jimmy and Jody, and they're friends of mine, and I'm very pained for the entire family, and all I can do is just send them my love and let them know that I'm thinking of them.
Yeah.
That's really all I can say. My heart is with you guys, with all of you.
Absolutely. And I know it's never an easy time, and I only have my sister, and both of my parents are still living. Heck, my grandmother was still alive a couple of years ago, and she was well into her 90s. So that, thankfully, is something I haven't had to deal with much in my life, but I'm the youngest one. So sooner or later, it's going to get to that point.
Well, the thing is, my mother was the first, not for us to go off on a maudlin tangent, but it is a reality, a grim reality in life. And, you know, in my family, because for those who listen to the show, I never talk about my family's background, but I never got to meet a soul on my father's side of the family. I probably have about 100 or so cousins because my father was the youngest of 7 children, but never met a single soul on his side. So all I grew up with was my mother's family. And in my family overall, my mother was the first one to die. So she died 29 years ago. Actually, it was 29 years ago on April 13th. So that's coming up this week. And, you know, my father died, it's going to be 8 years ago. So, and I don't have any siblings, so I do know what it's like. Both my grandparents are gone, and, you know, it's never easy. It doesn't, whoever tells you it gets easier, it doesn't, because when it's someone you love, someone close to you, you just try to have to brace yourself, and I'm going to say this in the most reasonable way I can. Deal with it as best that you can, however you deal with it, and never let anyone tell you you're supposed to deal with these things in a certain fashion, because that's nuts. We're all different, and we all deal with emotions in very different ways.
Right. But as you said before, I mean, to Jody and Jimmy and the rest of their family, all the love and peace in the world, guys. Now, exactly. That said, there are some things going on internationally. And over the course of the last few days, Syria has blown up, literally. And now there's a big argument going on about whether they used chemical weapons or not. They did. And there's also been a lot of strife going on in the Gaza Strip again. We've gone backwards now in history for, oh boy, got a good 30 years to the way things had been. You know, when I was in my teens, I remember seeing those places on the front page of the paper every single day. And now it's gotten back in that realm. And, you know, our place, as much as over the years I have decried our place self-imposed as world cop, now that we have shirked that responsibility and turned away from it almost entirely because the president's asleep at the switch, this is the kind of shit that's going to happen. We better get used to this.
If there's a light at the end of the tunnel on all of this, it's that we're only going to have to be used to it for 2 more years.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that 2 years can be – obviously, we've only gone through a year, not even a year and a half of this presidency, and I think we're all suffering. I think it's on the left and the right because it's a case of we're just tired.
Yeah.
You know, it's been just a never-ending sprint. It's a sprint to the bottom is what it is, you know? And it's draining. And I think if you're a reasonable human being, and it doesn't matter what your political stripes are, you're going to be tired of it. And you're going to be tired of being mad at somebody because they differentiate with you on a couple of viewpoints. You know, I don't have the wherewithal for any of it anymore. As far as the World Cop thing goes, that's one of the things that I was always proudest about the United States. Yes, I am indeed a patriot. You know, I love this country. This country has all the greatest things in the world to offer because we are able to sit here and have these kind of conversations, and we're allowed to argue with our parents or our friends or our neighbors about things that we all, have differing views on. But at the same time, overall, Americans, especially on the world scope, we're very fair about things. And most countries aren't. Now, everyone's been very good at spinning it the other way, saying we're the ones who are unfair. But as World Cop, we're needed. We are needed for that. That's why we have to return to being the superpower that we were after Russia fell.
Right.
Because people are just getting away with some unfathomable things. I mean, really, you know, Syria is the perfect example of it. And I'm dog tired of the New York Times and the way that their fake news, and I'm going to use that phrase, comes along with the way that they report what happens in the Gaza Strip. It's always the same kind of spin. Palestinians shot by Israeli army. No, it's Palestinians start attack on Israeli army at border from the Gaza Strip, etc. You know, who's the aggressor? Who's trying to kill who here?
Right.
You know, it's. I am so filled with hate and rage towards the New York Times and their blatant anti-Israel and by virtue of that anti-Semitic viewpoint on everything that I have but one thing to say to the New York Times, and it's not happy birthday.
Yeah, right. Well, and it goes back to if the UN didn't hold a lot of the same views and have a lot of the same foibles, then we wouldn't be as necessary as World Cop as we are, because the UN would be fulfilling its duty in an even-handed and rational manner.
Which the UN does not do in any way, shape, or form.
Of course they don't.
You know something? I used to consider the MTA the biggest mafia, legalized mafia in the world, uh-huh. But no, it's the UN. Because at least the MTA is just, you know, it's just part of New York.
Right.
It's not an international body.
Yeah. So while all of that's going on, back in New York, things are just as crazy. Because we had, over the last few days, we had a shooting that took place in Phoenix, Arizona, of a guy who was unarmed in his own or his grandmother's backyard. And that's causing all kinds of strife. And there's a couple of other pockets of this around because we keep seeing the same scenario repeat itself over and over and over again. But the one in New York is different, and the backlash to it is different as well. Take us through this. What happened?
Several 911 calls were made in a Brooklyn neighborhood about a man, you know, very frantic 911 calls about a man on the street holding what everybody who called in said it looks like a gun. We don't know if he's going to be shooting at anybody. He's been running around terrorizing basically everyone in the neighborhood.
That's the thing. He wasn't just holding it. He was pointing it at people. He was brandishing it like a gun.
Well, as it turned out, they had footage of him, camera footage of him he apparently hit a kid, you know, in the, with this thing.
Yep.
Cops appeared. They said, you know, drop it, drop it, drop it. He went in, it's all on film. Here's the thing. The camera doesn't lie. This is not some kind of trickery. He went into a combat stance, and so they shot him. It turned out it wasn't a gun, but it was piping. This man was known in the neighborhood. Now, half the people that knew him said he unfortunately had mental issues. The other half are all saying, oh, no, he was wonderful. But he had mental issues. His father, who's been, you know, ballyhooing about it, as well as his mother, they didn't get him the medical treatment he needed. Okay, that's number one. Number two, you cannot blame the police. These were 911 calls from several people who are of that neighborhood. Police are not mind readers. When somebody goes into a stance at you and they're not complying when you say, drop it, and it's all there, all of it is there on camera, you know, you don't even point a finger at the police.
Right.
You know, it's that simple. This is just common sense. Now, there are several people in the neighborhood disputing that the police ever said, drop your weapon, you know. But they're just looking for a reason to combat the police. They are looking for a reason to riot. Because, of course, who put himself in the thick of this but Al Sharpton? He's loving this and eating it up.
What a shock.
Right, a professional shit stirrer. So all I can say is this. You watch the footage, you decide for yourself. One thing, and I know this is going to sound very thwarted, but you know, they're on the Staten Island Advance website, you know, they have comments from people, and usually it's obviously stupid and or racist on both sides, because there's a lot of bad hombres out there.
On many sides, sure. Yeah.
But I'm reading through the chain of you know, comments, and with the exception of one guy, one, looking for, you know, fight to spoil with, everyone said the exact same thing. The police aren't mind readers. When somebody tells you drop it, you drop it. Whether it's a gun, a pipe, you know, a pencil, you don't point anything at police. And where the hell were the parents in getting him medical treatment? You know, such a good guy that he's out there hitting a child with this piping,
right.
You know, and making like he's going to shoot at them because people don't know. You know, he was running into the street, waving it at cars. I mean, we're talking about everybody in the community, black, white, it doesn't matter. You got the one guy, you know, trying to start the whole, you know, all cops bad kind of thing. You know, they don't care about us routine, all that kind of nonsense. Nobody was buying it. It's like, what would you do if you were in that situation?
Yeah, good. Well, at least cooler heads are prevailing.
Yeah, well, over here they are, and that's a good thing. But then again, we are just the weak / hick. We're the hick weak sister of New York City, which is fine, you know, because Brooklyn is just so above it all, you know. At least de Blasio kept his stupid mouth shut about it, too, because he's already put himself so far in it with the police in the city as it is over these years that for once – I'm not giving him credit. I'm just saying, for once, he stepped back.
Good. Yeah. Like I said, cooler heads in some ways prevailing. So we got one more to hit before we get to In Our Heads this week. And it's a kind of an odd addendum to a place that we were checking out last week with the demise of Toys R Us. And we've been, you know, seeing KB Toys sort of try to re-up itself with these little pop-up stores from time to time. And who knows how that's all going to shake out. But there's more news this week about Toys R Us, because the one thing that people had been really freaking out about is, am I still going to be able to use my gift card that I just got for Christmas, you know, a couple of months ago at Toys R Us? And yeah, but maybe not in the way you thought you would, huh?
Well, here's the odd thing. I mean, you can't get any toys at Bed Bath & Beyond who will honor Toys R Us gift cards. It's interesting and it's helpful.
Yeah.
It's just an odd thing, but you have to do it in a very quick manner. You can't dawdle, because it's only for a limited time that they'll accept them.
So good news there. And, you know, Toys R Us continues to sell off remaining inventory to try to pay off creditors as much as they can. And it's still, you know, the one that I drive by fairly regularly still has its doors open, but I don't think it's probably going to last the week.
Yeah, I think the ones on Staten Island will be closed probably by next Saturday.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm guessing by April 15th. And by the way, folks, you better hurry and get your taxes done.
That's right. Yeah, we just got ours done, and yeah, we owe again this year. Hee-haw. So I'll be scrambling.
For the first time in a decade, I owe. It was only $167 to the feds, but I got back, of all things, $76 from the state. That's a rarity.
Well, there you go.
Actually, yeah. I guess a pretty good coin, but because I was an independent contractor last year.
That's what killed. Yeah, that's what killed me too, and it killed me a lot more than just that, because I think between we got two states, a city, because St. Louis has its own 1% tax, and the federal government to deal with. And between the three of them, I think we're out, when all is said and done and it all evens itself out, to the tune of about $1,100.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could be worse if I hadn't saved all my receipts. But it would have been a little higher than that. But
attaboy.
I had one full accountant. Because he's a Jew.
Oh, yeah, of course. So that brings us to In Our Heads this week. And yes, Rob, you know, you do get an extra couple of days because of the way the calendar works out. So you have until the 17th. But as Rob pointed out, go get your taxes done or finish them yourself if you do them yourself. And as we get to In Our Heads, I saw something, and this is kind of related to what I was talking about earlier, with just having had it with the news and cranking up the radio in the car and putting some good music on, because a friend of mine actually started one of these threads on Facebook the other day, and I see so many of these things that are music related. I've even started a few myself, but this one I hadn't seen before, and it seems like such an obvious thing. He just said, "What's the song you like singing along with in the car the most?" And I thought about it, and I was like, well, really anything, you know, it's another one that's like last week that's really hard to narrow down. There are so many great ones, but the two that popped up into my head first are The Refreshments' Banditos, because that's the first song I heard by them, and it's still just so much fun. The chorus in that song is funny, and it's the words just fit together so well. It's a joy to sing. And the other one, I don't know why this one popped into my head, because I love singing along with Robert Plant, but the Led Zeppelin track that popped into my head was How Many More Times. And boy, do you get to scream your ass off in that song. It's just great. You know, there are songs that are fun to sing like that, that you sing along with everything, but still, when you get to those tracks, they're just a blast.
Now, question. Now, is there a sub question to this? You know, is it when you're driving by yourself? Someone is in the car with you.
See, I don't care. I don't care how many people are in the car. I will be belting it out like Merman.
Everything's coming. For me, I think my favorite to belt out in the car when I'm by myself has to be, after all these years, still, because I still do it whenever I get the chance, and it's so fucking weirdly obscure, is my imitation of Scott Walker singing Jacques Brel's Matilda.
My heart, I don't want you to say she's lovelier than when she went away. Matilda, come back to me. My heart, stop being overjoyed. Remember, you were once destroyed by Matilda, who's come back to me. Fellas, please don't go away. Tell me that I mustn't stay. Matilda's coming back today.
So over the top, you know, it's like this big Toreador type opening,
right,
with a very Spanish feel to it, and the operatic and over dramatic delivery that Scott Walker's voice has. But it's a great exercise for singing, which is why.
Yep.
So between that, and then going into Montague Terrace in Blue, and then two songs by the Walker Brothers. Of course, The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore. And the flip side of that, which is the next on the CD, is After the Lights Go Out, because they're just great vocal exercises.
You know what else I like for that purpose is songs that have 4,000 words in them. Things like End of the World as We Know It by R.E.M. or Reasons to Be Thankful Part 3 by Ian Dury and the Blockheads.
Cheddar, cheese, and pickle, the Vincent motorcycle, slap and tickle. Woody Allen, Dolly, Demetri, and Pasquale, Bala 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 and Valari. Something else to study, finding up a buddy, being in my nuddy. Saying okie dokie, sing along a smoky, coming out a chokey. John Coltrane, soprano, Eddie Celentano, Bona Carlino. Reasons to be cheerful, part three. Reasons to be cheerful, part three. Reasons to be cheerful, part three. Reasons to be cheerful. One, two, three.
The middle break in Hook by the Blues Traveler, where he's doing the suck it in, suck it in, suck it in, if you're in Tintin or Anne Boleyn, that thing, it's great because it keeps you on track and you have to remember every single word in that thing. It's also a pain in the ass to try to learn it in the first place, but it's still fun.
Well, that's why I was going to say, you know, one of the songs I love singing along to most in the car is Judy in Disguise with Glasses.
Yes.
Because it's got so many weirdly obtuse words that you're not sure of.
Right. Oh, you know what? You know what else is the last verse of The Boys Are Back in Town, where the timing is all off from the first two verses? He doesn't sing it in the same fashion. So, again, you have to pay attention to what you're doing.
See, I have this whole bunch of songs that I just love singing along with in the car. And it's if I'm using my iPod, which is rare in the car, but if I am using it, it's called Psychedelic Bubblegum and One Hit Wonders.
Right.
So I will sing along at maximum volume, and I'm talking about vocally, with Hair.
Uh-huh.
Which is a great, again, a great vocal exercise, too. Like I said, Judy in Disguise with Glasses, the last song by the Edward Bear, I Remember You by Frank Ifield, Reach Out in the Darkness by Brendan Lover.
I knew a man that I did not care for, and then one day, this man gave me a call. We sat and talked about things on our minds, and now this man.
One of my favorite songs to sing along with is just this great little pop song called Melody Hill by the Archies.
Okay. Well, see, and that's not bad because it goes into another reason why. See, with the Beatles stuff that we all started singing along in the car to, part of the reason for doing that is to try to pick out all, well, both or sometimes all three harmonies and, right. You know, and try to sing all of them, you know, and then back the song up and sing it again and sing a different one. And for that reason, anything that's got heavy duty harmonies like that. And one of the ones I find most interesting, oddly enough, is the Steve Miller Band. They've got some great vocal harmonies and some interesting ones that are not just stock standard. Okay. You take the fifth, you take the seventh.
Now, see, for me, whenever I hear harmonies and stuff that I sing on, I'll just take my standard part just so I can keep it perfect.
Right, right.
Simply, If I Fell.
Yes.
I Am a Rock or Homeward Bound. Carrie Ann, which I always sang. Whenever we used to do it, I always did the Graham Nash part.
Hey, Carrie Ann, what's your game? Not can anybody play?
You know, stuff like that, or anything, of course, by the Everly Brothers. I would always sing the higher ones, the higher harmonies. And then I would sing the lead, which is a kind of a weird thing to do, which I shouldn't be doing, but I always did because that's how we did the songs. But you know what? I just realized my other absolute favorite song on the other end of the spectrum to sing along with in the car, if it's not Scott Walker, it's Band on the Run. Because there's so much. It's such a grand piece.
Right. Yeah. It's a three-part symphony. So yeah, you've got a lot going on.
Always, always, always refining my skills as imitating Dirk McQuickley. So
yeah. Yeah, great list. All right, well, excellent. I knew you would have great answers for that, as always. And next week, I'm going to pass in our heads back to you for next time. So you got a week to think about it, man. We'll see what you come up with.
I will. All right. You heard it here first, folks.
Well, listen, brother, have a great week, and I will talk at you again next Sunday.
Absolutely. You take care of yourself, feel well, and we will see you all, God willing, if the waters don't rise any higher.